Originally, it was going to be a presentation on ADHD and women, and then my presentation on ADHD and NDIS. And the presentation on ADHD and women was part of the binational peer review group that I'm part of. But unfortunately, some of our members haven't been able to attend. So Peter is going to talk about women and some of the particular vulnerabilities that they have, which makes them candidates, I guess, for the NDIS, or where the NDIS can help out. And I'll also be doing a case study of someone that I've been working with for some time on the NDIS. So, and also the information that I'm going to be talking about today, most of it is on the website that's on the slide there. If you just click on the button that says NDIS information, and if you're a bit dumb like me and nothing comes up, so you keep pushing it, and then you realize that the download signal's gone about three times. So you'll be able to download the information. Okay, I'll assume that. Now, first of all, I'm going to talk about the issue that we hear about most of all when we talk about NDIS and ADHD, and that is that it's not covered by Disability Act for NDIS. So what is it? Oh, I had a little booklet, which I've left on my seat, but which it contains the Commonwealth Disability Discrimination Act 1992. And this is one of the clauses in it, a condition which means a person learns differently from other people, for example, a person with autism, dyslexia, attention deficit disorder, or an intellectual disability. That is part of the Commonwealth Disability Discrimination Act, which is current. So if you are discriminated on any of those grounds, you can use that act. It's quite interesting that the common knowledge is that for the purposes of the NDIS, the learning disorders and ADHD were taken out of the act. Now, I can't find anywhere, when I did a Google search, that says that. So anybody superficially looking for it would find things like the one that really blew me away, that ADHD can be effectively treated with medication and therefore isn't a disability. I thought, wow, if only. And then there was the common one, doesn't qualify as a disability. And then there's ones that say, yes, we can. And then I looked at, well, can I find it on the list of recognized disabilities? And it's not on there. And yet, this week I was doing a letter for someone for a disability support pension. And I'm very negative about anybody's chances of getting on that. So I thought, well, I'd better just go and have a look at the guidelines again. And there was ADHD on the list of psychiatric conditions that were likely to be present for people who needed a DSP. But they said manifesting with predominantly behavioral problems, which I did had a bit of an issue with. It would appear from people that I've talked to who were around at the time that the human Gillian Trigg, human resource, what's her name? Which was she? Human Rights, yes, sorry, Human Rights Commissioner at the time was asked what could be excluded from the NDIS, and she made a ruling, and that's where it comes from. But it's not well known, except apparently in the ADHD community. So I think we should not let it stop us. Trying to get our clients onto the NDIS. Now, what I thought I'd do is just also give you an idea of the players in this. It's a little bit confusing. We have the National Disability Insurance Scheme, and that's the one that mostly we think about and we talk about it, and that is a scheme that rolls out support. But there's a NDIS Quality and Safeguards Commission. They're the ones who are in the process at the moment of crediting us all and costing us money and time. And that's relatively new. There's also the National Disability Insurance Agency, the NDIA. And if we want to get changes through, this is the agency that we need to be working with. But my view is that unless we can get the disability status cleared up, we're not in a very strong position to negotiate with them. So they're the ones that develop the policies and the procedures. And they're doing quite a lot of research. And we've got to remember, this is a very young scheme. It's extremely broad in its range. When it first was thought about, I don't think anybody thought about people with psychosocial disabilities. And they're now realizing that this is a group that actually really can fulfill the insurance requirements of the scheme. It's an insurance scheme, which is if you put in resources, you will get a positive outcome. And there's a realization that for this group of people, we can probably get some very positive outcomes that will mean less money ongoing in their support. But the scheme has got a lot of impediments to actually working well with this group of people, but they're aware of it, but it's just going to be a slow process to get change. What have I got? Oh, yes. Now, there's two other aspects of the scheme, and they call these partners. The Early Childhood Intervention Scheme is 0-6, and it is contracted out to organisations in each area. They have their own set of rules, and they have a much less stringent entry requirement. You've just got to have developmental delay. So it doesn't matter really what diagnosis you've got, as long as you can demonstrate significant developmental delay. The area that I think is a great area for ADHD is that of severe behavior problems. And I think that the tendency is to see that they're a parental problem. And that's another area where I think we have to advocate to the scheme to be more understanding of the needs of children with severe behavioral issues, whatever their diagnosis. The other group of partners is one that, if you're working with someone from the NDIS, you'll probably come across. They're the local area coordination people, and they are also contracted out to an organisation in my own part of Sydney. It's St Vincent de Paul. But there are various NGOs that have taken on this group, and I think one Central Coast, one of the PHNs, is operating in that way too. So they're the people that, when you've sent in an application and it's been accepted, it goes out to the local area coordination office, and someone will ring you, and they'll do a planning meeting. And they should, if you don't have support coordination, continue to help you along the way. I've found this a very weak link. Beginning to see it's getting a bit stronger. But one of the reasons why we have a lot of confusion around the NDIS is that it's now statewide. It started off, I think, New South Wales and perhaps South Australia, ACT. The first year, it was a mixture of NDIS and state disability. And the second year, it becomes full state. And Queensland and Victoria have just gone on to a full state, NDIS program. That is, they're completely governed by the NDIS rules and regulations. Western Australia has negotiated a different system, and I'm afraid I don't get that. They're a little bit behind us, and it'll be interesting to see how that works out for them. So we've got something which is being rolled out on a national basis. We've got a huge workforce. We've got a contracted workforce because there isn't stable funding from the government. So we've got people that are coming for short periods of time. We've got people doing jobs that have not really existed before. And we're going to have a really big workforce shortage. And a lot of lack of skills and knowledge in those people. Plus the NDIS can come up with a policy and procedure, and it's not rolled out to everybody. It might be rolled out, and also it might be rolled out to the local area coordination people, but they're all independent organisations. So the NDIS then talks to the The NDIS might talk to the local area coordination companies, and then they have to train their staff. So there's lots of areas where there's going to be miscommunication. So there's only about 5 minutes. So this you can get from the website, because this is all there. We need to have a diagnosis, and that diagnosis has to be permanent. It also needs, the diagnosing clinician, which has got to be it's got to be a specialist, pediatrician, psychiatrist, not sure whether it's clin psych or psych. I think that, I'm not getting into that one. But it has to be a specialised diagnosis. It has to be a DSM-5. Same for any of the psychosocial disabilities, they're now asking for a DSM-5. I found it a little odd that I was asked to diagnose intellectual disability using a DSM-5, but it's a functional diagnosis, so in sense it makes sense for the DSM, for the NDIS. So you've got to have a DSM-5 diagnosis. I think I'm gone. No, that's right. Sorry. And that's relatively new, saying they want DSM-5. And that's another reason why I think we can happily go with ADHD. We can go with anything that's in DSM, as long as we put DSM-5. But the important thing is that it has to be a functional disability. So DSM-5 diagnosis, it's permanent, and from a medical point of view, it's fully treated. Otherwise, they'll say, well, just give them some more pills and then they'll get better, so we don't need to worry about you. So you can see all this on the website. This is all, or when you're looking into the NDIS. You're filling in an access form, and I guess that some of the clinicians around here will have had to fill in an access form. You've got stupid little squares that, if you actually filled them in, you wouldn't give enough information to the planners for them to make a decision. So what I do is I just write in "see attached" and put a report. So you can do a global assessment of functioning. It's not as important as looking at their modalities. HUDAS is easy to download. It's free. PEDICAT is not. But the really important things is that you specify the disabilities, the functional disabilities in each of those six domains. Okay. I'll skip case study one. Now, I'm going to team up with Peter, and I thought this case study would be really good, but do we have any questions on the NDIS itself? I feel like I've raced through it.
No, we can pause for questions. It might be sensible, I think.
And then we can get more into a clinical presentation.
Peter can keep going.
Yeah.
I apologize. It had a blank space after you. I didn't realize that was you, Peter. That's fine. we haven't had anyone put anything through. No. Does routine ADHD ever get funding?
Yes. Yes.
Good.
If you make a case out for why your funding is needed and it fits the guidelines, they're not going to knock it back on the diagnosis. If they knocked it back on the diagnosis, I'd say, great. That gives us something to go to the media, to go to the politicians, and that gives us something to fight on. So I'd say, bring that one on.
What about this issue of permanence, a permanent diagnosis, when in fact many mental conditions will wax and wane, and there'll be, you know, I mean, are you talking that we have to attach a diagnostic label for life in order for these kids, for example, to get funded, even though we know some of them will remit, etc.?
I believe that there is that understanding that's coming through, but the level at which we're putting in the applications, the people there, they need something that's black and white. It's actually continuous. What they are saying, it can be either permanent or continuous. They will accept continuous.
Okay.
ADHD, we can say, is permanent because it's a condition of the brain.
Sure. Heidi, and then we've got one more on the app.
Mm-hmm. I think this is fabulous, and I think it's great for it to be included under the NDIS. I think the thing that I struggle with, and I wonder about your comments, I have two patients who are covered under the NDIS, they're self-funded, neither of them have ADHD. One of them has done high-level work with the NDIS, employment-based, highly organised, highly intelligent, and has a degenerative disorder, multiple physical and mental disabilities, and they have not backed the majority of funding. For somebody who knows exactly how the system works and has all the skills put in place, I get a bit worried about setting people up for failure. People with ADHD typically aren't good at collecting information, filling out the forms. What thoughts do you have about what's their success rate likely to be when you have reviewers say what's the difference between a physical disability and mental disability, which is exactly what they said to my patient.
Yeah, I had one of my clients with level 2 autism have the planner ring them, and as long as she could do something physically, then what's the problem?
Yeah.
I think we just have to keep going because it's a process of education. That's all I can say is we need to keep going. And as far as getting somebody with with moderate to severe ADHD on the scheme, they can't do it themselves.
No,
you've got to have somebody who will do it with them. I do. I do, yeah.
Is this information on the ADHD Foundation website?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a bit of a morass to navigate for... I'm confused just, you know, charting it all, right? It's pretty difficult. So
you
need someone to shepherd you through that process, surely.
And if you go to the NDIS website...
We've got them flooding in now. This app thing's really good. How can the authorities designing NDIS ever think that any psychosocial condition can ever be fully treated medical? Oh, there you go.
You can put continuous. Continuous is acceptable, but you're more at risk of having it, having a rejection, and then you have to go through appeal, and that takes 3 months.
Until what age are early childhood interventions available?
Until the 0 to 6, the end of the 6th year, and then you go on to NDIS proper. Yes.
A good local area coordinator, but linking them in that under six age group
That's
is
true.
Really critical and much easier.
Good. Okay, Edwina, thanks very much. This has been going hot on the listserv lately for APA. Lots of questions about NDIS, access, disability acts, discrimination acts. So there's clearly a lot of confusion even within the field about it, so one only can imagine how much patients and their families are Peter,
how much time do we have left?
If you're 2 slots, then technically you've got another 15 minutes.
Okay, well, I'll take 5 minutes to talk about a case. It is. it has relevance to what Peter's saying. And also, look, she really exemplifies Monica's fibbing, although she swears blind that she never ever tells a lie. So this is Jane, and she's a woman in her early 40s. This is her current situation. She's separated, only has supervised access to her children. She lives in social housing, and she's on the DSP. Now, I've known her for some years. We're on the second year of a DSP plan, an NDIS plan. Her major condition is ADHD. She was diagnosed at the age of 19 while in rehab for alcohol abuse. And she's very severe. She's currently on double the normal dosage of Dex and quite a number of other medication, which I don't want to get into now. She's also had a lot of trauma in her life. Early life was dominated by her elder brother, who was dying from a degenerative neurological disease and died when he was 20. I've put in there adjustment disorder because she's lost access to, she's lost custody of her children in the last 2 years. And I've also put query oppositional defiant disorders because that's often what we feel like when we're working with her, that she's a bit like a really difficult adolescent at times. And squalor is an ever-present concern. I never bothered to really look at it as hoarding disorder. Not sure whether it is. My hoarders aren't usually as squalid as she is, let's put it that way. And she has been diagnosed as bipolar. She's got very poor emotional regulation, and she's used alcohol as self-medication. When I first came across her, she was on, I think, 30 milligrams of Dex a day, and it wasn't enough, so she would double it for 2 weeks and then drink a bottle of champagne slowly through the day on the other 2 weeks, in order to medicate. So it's quite severe. So what we've got is we've got support coordination, and the support coordinators, we're a team that's been working with her for quite a long time, and we're actually very fond of her. And she's got a lot of strengths. Bounce back.
How old are the children?
What would they be now? About 10, 8. And there's a stepson of 17 or 18. Yeah. She's got one of the support coordinators is a registered nurse, so she looks after medication and her health, which is quite poor. She's verging on diabetic. She's got some chronic pain from some back injuries, possibly something else. My role is behavior support. And she also has support workers coming in for 2 or 3 hours, 5 to 6 days a week. And largely that's being, we would like to get her a better quality of life, but largely that's being for two purposes. One is to stop her place becoming squalid and threatened, and then she will be threatened with eviction and homelessness. And the other is to support her during access with her children. And then one of my interns also provides some mindfulness training and relaxation, and she's actually been opening up a lot about the trauma. The intern, by the way, is very experienced coming back after leave having children. So what we're providing is at the moment, we're just trying to keep her safe. She's got a history of domestic violence. Husband, you know, at times we can't really blame the husband. We think that she'd be very difficult to live with. But if we didn't have all of this support from the NDIS, I'd say she would be homeless. She would not be seeing her children at all. She's been very challenging. We've had to put in restricted some. What I call restrictive behaviors, like trying to restrict what goes into the house. She's under financial management. Her husband had a good job, plenty of money, and could support her constant shopping. and pay all the bills. But since going on to a DSP, she's needed financial support from a financial guardian. And we're at the point now, because we just cannot get her to cooperate with looking after the house. She has a tendency, and this is where the fibbing comes in, as soon as things get messy, she starts to avoid, and she starts to push away the support workers. We got her agreement to put in a key safe so that they can come in, and got her agreement that they will come in every day no matter what. And we've also got control over that, because we have control over a medication. I went in one of the times when the place was just fairly indescribable, and this was before we had the medication sorted. I think there were about 55 milligram dex on the floor, because she has very poor coordination. If she drops anything goes on the floor, that's it disappears. A neuropsych, I think, said that she thought she had about 25% of a normal attention span. So very, very limited attention span, only on directly what she's doing. So you can see how that would impact on her parenting. She was removed from the house by docs because of the state of the house. And she was seen as the one who's been contributing to that. And the husband cut her loose, because otherwise he would not be able to take the children. He now has the children. So it's very important for this case. And what we've got is the support workers, we've got myself, we've got support coordination. And without that, her situation would be quite dire. So it's worth going with it. And the primary diagnosis for the NDIS is attention deficit disorder.